Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The results of Florida's 2018 legislative session, which ended earlier this month, yielded mixed results when it comes to priorities for the state's environmental advocates. Governor Rick Scott's budget priorities prior to the start of session came out strongly in favor of environmental issues, and in the end, lawmakers did appropriate $100 million for the state's primary conservation land buying program called Florida Forever, although that amount is less than what environmental advocates had been hoping for. It's still an improvement over the $0 allocated to the program in 2017. Meanwhile, a proposed ban on hydraulic fracturing went down in defeat for yet another year. Lawmakers also approved a measure that transfers wetland protection authority in the Federal Clean Water Act away from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and then into the hands of the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Proponents say that the move clears away unnecessary red tape for development permitting, but opponents worry that it will reduce environmental review and protections for the state's sensitive wetlands. Joining me now for a closer look at how environmental issues fared in this year's state legislative session is Julie Rathmel. She's interim executive director of Audubon Florida. Rathmel is credited with helping the organization return to its roots of working to strengthen bird conservation leadership over the past decade. She led Audubon's Florida-based efforts to respond to the Gulf oil spill in 2010 and built a program of coastal citizen science, stewardship, and advocacy. Throughout this last legislative session, Rathmel was a regular fixture testifying in committee meetings whenever environmental policy was on the agenda. Julie Rathmel, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't think we don't have her just yet. I'm sorry. She'll be joining us a little bit later. With us in studio is the Conservancy of Southwest Florida's Director of Environmental Policy, Nicole Johnson. For about the past 20 years, Johnson's been an active advocate for local land use policies that protect natural resources, among other environmental initiatives. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. You can connect with our guest by calling at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So let's start off going back to the end of 2017 when Governor Rick Scott came out really strongly in favor of environmental issues, calling for a $1.7 billion investment in Florida's environment. To review, that included a proposed $335 million for Everglades restoration, $55 million for freshwater springs, $100 million for post-Irma beach restoration, and a $40 million increase in spending for state parks. Scott also called for $50 million for the state's main land conservation program called Florida Forever. Were you pleasantly surprised to see that the governor came out so strongly on the environment at the beginning of before the session started?
Well, from the Conservancy's perspective, one of our primary objectives for the 2018 session was to get significant funding for the Florida Forever Land Acquisition Program. We had wanted to see legislation that would dedicate for the remaining life of the program that significant pot of funding. That didn't happen. However, the legislature did go ahead and put $100 million into the state's budget in order to allow Florida Forever and the programs underneath the Florida Forever suite, such as Florida Communities Trust and the Rural and Family Lands, to have funding allocated this session. So we consider that a success. We'll certainly be back next year to find that legislative mechanism that will ensure dedicated funding throughout the remainder of the life of the program. But to have that $100 million now available so that landowners have an option. Instead of potentially developing their lands, they do have an opportunity to sell their lands to the state. Those lands are then utilized for water recharge, for flowways, for restoration, for public recreational opportunities. This is a really positive step forward, and we consider that to be a major success from this session.
That is one success. He asked for $50 million for Florida Forever and ended up getting $100 million, but you had been hoping that it could be guaranteed funding in future years because it sounds like last year it got zero, but before the recession under Crist and his administration, the program was usually getting about $300 million a year.
Correct.
Would that be more in line of what you would be expecting or would hope for?
Yes. And that's really what the voters were expecting when in 2014 they voted in favor of the Water and Land Conservation Amendment. And so we're wanting to get the legislation in line with the voters' intent. And this session, we did have a couple of bills that were moving through the Senate. Senator Rob Bradley put in place a proposed bill that would have dedicated the $100 million. And then Representative Caldwell had a different bill on the House side that would not have allocated any funding this year and then would have gradually allocated funding in the future. And from the Conservancy's perspective, we wanted to see that money in the budget this year. And we really have to send out our thanks to Senator Rob Bradley, because he went in there and he negotiated and got that $100 million into the budget. So that was tremendous work on his part, and we are extremely grateful.
But then next year, are you going to have to go up and fight the same fight again?
We will. And next year, we will again be asking for legislation that will dedicate that funding.
Mm-hmm. We do have Julie Rathmel on the phone now from the Audubon, Florida. She's the interim executive director. I introduced you earlier, Julie, but we seem to have dropped you on the line. But I want to welcome you to the conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was definitely an interesting legislative session, and we're gratified to see that kind of support, not just for Florida Forever, but also for Everglades restoration.
Well, it's kind of a surprise. You know, Governor Scott, during his tenure as governor, we've seen a kind of a pattern emerge in which he comes out really strongly in favor of environmental priorities when he's facing an election compared to the years when he's not. If he were to win the Senate race he's highly anticipated to enter this year, are you concerned that his tone on the environment could shift when he gets up to Washington if he does win?
I would certainly hope not. I think that most politicians in Florida recognize that our ecology is our economy. And I think that voters vote that way. And, elected officials recognize that. I'd also mention that, you know, our economy has been recovering during the governor's term. So I think that we've seen kind of a growing commitment to that that's kept pace with the return of the economy. So I'm optimistic. I think that he's made some good recommendations, especially in this year's governor's budget prior to the legislative session. And I hope to see more from all of our elected officials. We know that our environment protects our quality of life.
Yeah, but then it's interesting that you point out that the economy is recovering, and that's you're starting to see a shift in focus where these dollars can go back towards the environment. You came into your current position after Governor Scott tapped your old boss, Eric Draper, to run the state parks department last fall. Will having one of your own in such a high position in state government kind of be a boon to Audubon, Florida's goals?
I don't know that it's necessarily a boon to Audubon, Florida specifically, but I do think it's a boon to Floridians. I mean, Eric Draper was a wonderful leader of Audubon, Florida, and he'll be an excellent state park director. Our parks are not just locations for recreation, but they also protect some of the state's most vulnerable and imperiled wildlife and habitats. And so, the work that they're doing at the state parks is important to all of us to protect our natural heritage.
Mm-hmm. Nicole Johnson, we know that Senator Dana Young once again this year championed an effort to ban fracking in the state of Florida. That failed once again this year. Last year, lawmakers like House Majority Leader Republican Ray Rodriguez of Fort Myers held up that bill over concerns that the ban would leave the state vulnerable to lawsuits under Florida's Burt Harris Private Property Rights Protection Act, because there has been no Florida-specific study into the impacts of fracking in Florida's unique geology. Is that what held up the bill again this year, do you think?
Well, I think I would have to couch the bill this year not as a failure, but as tremendous progress.
It did okay in the Senate, but it didn't really get anywhere in the House.
It did okay in the Senate, and we knew going in that we were going to have the same issues in the House because you had the same leadership individuals, both the Speaker Corcoran and also Representative Majority Leader Rodriguez that have basically not allowed this bill to move forward. However, I will say that progress has been made, considering that this bill, again, was introduced and sponsored in a bipartisan manner, and it actually made it through two of its Senate committees. That's the furthest that this bill has ever gone before. And it was heard by the Senate, even though they knew that the House probably wasn't going to take it up. So to
kind of
me,
a symbolic move.
It's a symbolic. They really, really believe in this. So we see this as tremendous momentum forward going into this campaign. We knew that it was going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And so we will continue to move this forward. And I do believe that Floridians are going to be asking tough questions of their elected officials and hopefully make this an issue during the upcoming election season, to understand where candidates are on the issue of fracking.
Do you foresee a time when groups such as the Conservancy might get behind doing a study of Florida-specific geography and how fracking impacts it?
Well, it's interesting because when you look at the body of literature that has come out about fracking, and when I say fracking, I'm using that as the umbrella term for matrix acidizing and all those well stimulation techniques. And when you look at the amount of study and literature that is coming out almost on a weekly basis, I believe that we don't need to do a Florida-specific study. The studies are out there. The impacts are known. Florida is a tourism-based economy. We know that fracking requires a tremendous amount of freshwater resources. We know that by 2070, we're not going to have enough water. We know that Florida only has 0.1% of the nation's oil reserves. And we also know that the quality of the oil in Florida is not high quality. So Florida is not part of America's energy independence. And Florida is a tourism-based economy that is going to be running out of water. So we don't need to study this. We know that this is incompatible with Florida.
Mm-hmm. We're exploring how environmental issues fared in this year's state legislative session, which wrapped up earlier this month. And we're speaking with Audubon Florida's Julie Rathmel and Nicole Johnson with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Now, another bill that environmental advocates were watching very closely was on the surface is just to be a small statutory change that now transfers federal Clean Water Act authority from federal to a state government entity when it comes to consideration of dredge and fill development permits. What's this measure all about, and what do you think it will mean when it comes to protections for Florida's sensitive wetlands? Julie, can I direct that question to you?
Sure. I think it's something that we were all watching with quite a bit of concern, in no small part because what this kind of consolidation of permitting would look like is largely undefined. What the bill was requesting were some small statutory changes that would pave the way for the state of Florida to apply for delegation of Section 404 permitting. These are dredge and fill permits under the EPA's Clean Water Act, which are performed by the Army Corps of Engineers. Oftentimes, these are large permits that have landscape scale implications, whether it's building new cities or new industrial uses of our landscapes. And currently, those projects go through both a state permit review as well as a federal permit review. Oftentimes, that federal permit review is very exhaustive and also undertakes a negotiation process back and forth that helps to get the projects in the right configuration, minimizing their footprint, maximizing their mitigation so that the impacts to wetlands are limited. What the state is requesting is to pull down that program and to implement it itself, but the agreements between the state and those federal agencies have not yet been hammered out, and also the rulemaking hasn't been undertaken by the state to see exactly what portions of the law will be adopted by Florida. With all of that uncertainty, understanding the importance of the 404 permitting program And just the sheer magnitude of Florida's wetlands, their vulnerability and their importance to our state, it was a cause for great concern for members in the conservation community, and many of us were raising that alarm in no small part because there just wasn't a lot of detail yet about what that program would look like. And despite our requests to the legislature to bring it back for ratification, meaning DEP, go forth, work this out, and bring it back so that everybody can look at it and dig around in it and understand it before you go forward with an application, the legislature decided instead to simply give it a thumbs up and leave it in DEP's hands to work out those details and to proceed with the request for delegation.
Well, this bill seemed to kind of fly through it. Nicola, it progressed really rapidly through the legislative committee process before environmental advocates and even the media were paying much attention to it. Did this bill just kind of slip by everybody?
Well, certainly from the Conservancy's viewpoint, this did pop up, seemingly out of the blue. We've been hearing that there was an undercurrent of it leading up to session, but it wasn't anything that the Conservancy, and I don't believe anyone in the environmental community, had brought into that discussion. I do want to point out that this bill has not been signed into law by the governor yet.
Okay, still waiting.
It's still waiting. So there is still the opportunity to take action and to ask the governor not to sign this bill, to actually veto this bill. If he doesn't sign it, it goes into law. So to actively veto this bill. And if people are interested in learning more about what we're calling the Kill the Bill campaign, then go to conservancy.org, and there's lots of information there and a take action page.
I got a Cliff Notes version of this from John Davis, and he's WGCU's legislative expert. So he kind of gave me the quick, if you're not really involved in conservation, this is how you can understand it. The way it, and tell me if I'm getting this right. It sounds like the way it was, or the way it is still until this becomes a law, is if you're wanting to do some development on some wetlands, you have to talk with state. And then you also have to talk with federal. This is taking the federal out of it and putting it all in the hands of the state, which is the Department of Environmental Protection. This is correct?
Correct.
Correct.
And it would be essentially having the Department of Environmental Protection, with no additional resources allocated, having to learn state, federal wetlands laws and the state – the federal wetlands laws, a federal permitting process, and to have then state staff actually interpret and apply those federal guidelines, which is something that they don't do now. So how this could be done within the existing state context is a question that we have continually brought forward. We don't believe that it's efficient. And we believe that it really could lead to the state being completely overwhelmed, in addition to the fact that we believe that having separate layers of government implementing their separate layers of laws and policies is really the best way to go. Who best to implement federal laws but that federal agency that's responsible for, in this case, the Clean Water Act implementation?
And Julie?
Well, Nicole really put her finger on it, too, with the fact that DEP is asserting that they need no additional staff to take on this program, which is a bit daunting. I mean, the Army Corps of Engineers has an entire department that works on issuing these permits, and at the same time, we recognize that with the recession, there were dramatic cuts to the staffing capacity at both DEP and the Water Management District. With the recovery of the economy, with the uptick in permit requests, those staffing levels really have not kept pace. They haven't recovered. And now this proposes to layer yet another permitting program on top of those staff. It's hard to understand the mathematics of how you get that much work out of those few individuals and get it done well and on the timelines that they're required to abide by.
And I'm wondering if this is the Federal Clean Water Act, if there is development that's allowed to slide by because of an overwhelmed state agency, which it sounds like that's what the fear would be. Is there something else? Are there other federal things such as endangered species that are being protected by the existence of these wetlands that could be threatened?
Well, there is an element of the review that requires consultation on the Endangered Species Act. And so that's part of the negotiations that the state will have to work out with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We don't yet understand the terms of that. We don't understand exactly how they're going to manage that, and that will be a very important thing to come to terms with. And that's one reason why we were so concerned that, you know, legislators were signing off on this without understanding those details, because it's a very real issue.
Is there any possibility of the state entity that would be tasked with taking on implementing these federal rules, could they say, no, we don't want that job and send it back?
No, because they're the ones that are applying for it. So the leadership of those agencies is requesting the delegation.
Oh, they seem to feel that they can take it on.
The good news is that the permit time clock, at least for these federal permits, is being suspended. So the state time clock will remain in place for state ERP permits, but at least for the Federal Clean Water Act permits that the state would assume, there would be no time clock, meaning that if the applicant submit an application, the agency has as much time as they need to review and either approve or deny the permit.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, are there any other environmental issues that came up this year that that we didn't address that kind of are still lingering, or anything that got solved?
Well, from the Conservancy's perspective, we, of course, have our list of legislative priorities and things such as a statewide stormwater rule. There are things that just didn't get picked up and didn't get addressed. However, we had really focused our priorities on, of course, getting funding for Florida Forever, moving the ball forward with the fracking ban. And then, of course, we know that there's always a surprise that's going to come up. And this session, it was that 404 delegation. So we'll be back next session to deal with a whole host of issues and probably add a few to that.
But as it stands, you're mobilizing, trying to get people to urge Governor Scott to veto that particular one bill.
Yes, absolutely. And until it's signed, there's still a chance that he may hopefully do the right thing and veto it.
All right. And Julia, is there anything that that you saw go through or not move in session this year that you would like to discuss that I didn't touch on?
Sure. Well, I mean, I really think that one of the biggest parts of this session were the things that didn't pass. And that was largely down to advocates like your listeners speaking up and making sure that their legislators heard their voices. Things like there was a series of tree bills that would have limited local government's ability to protect urban trees. Neither of those bills passed. Before then, though, the House sponsor revised hers substantially because of the feedback that she got. And then in the last 2 weeks of session, there was a litany of just terrible, terrible amendments that came forward. There was one that would have limited the little guy's ability to challenge agency decisions, and that one got defeated as a result of grassroots engagement. There was another that would have kicked the can even further on high-performance septic tanks and their installation to protect our springs and other water quality. And there was another amendment that would have punched holes in lots of counties' rural service areas, so those growth management protections that help to protect our rural communities and also our environmentally endangered lands. All three of those amendments were either withdrawn or the underlying bills that they were being added to died under the weight of those poor amendments. And, you know, we're really grateful to all of the voters of Florida who reached out to their legislators on short notice. And for your listeners who might be interested in receiving those kinds of alerts, I'd encourage them to go to our website, fl.audubon.org, and click on sign up so that you can get those updates and you can be up to the minute on what issues are popping and how you can help make a difference for Florida's wildlife and water.
And it sounded like we had a lot of grassroots activism. So that's all the time that we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guests. We've been speaking with Audubon Florida's Interim Executive Director, Julie Raithmell, and the Conservancy of Southwest Florida's Director of Environmental Policy, Nicole Johnson. It was great to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Our show today was produced by Mike and Irie and John Davis. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.